This is Find Your Dream Job, the podcast that helps you get hired, find the career you want, and make a difference in life. I'm Mac Pritchard, your host. I'm also the founder of MaxList. It's a job board in the Pacific Northwest that helps professionals find fulfilling careers. To get your dream job, you need clear goals, great skills, and a good network. You also have to know how to look for work. One of the best ways to get good at job hunting is to talk to people who do it well. That's why once a month on our show, I interview a MaxList reader who found a job they love. Our guest shares how they did it and offers their best job search tips. Today, I'm talking to Julie Majors. She's a family engagement and support specialist, and she works at the Division of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at the Oregon Health and Sciences University. Julie Majors believes in the power of patience. In a story you can find on the MaxList website, Julie says the job she wanted helping young people with mental health conditions didn't exist. So she had to remain patient until an employer created the position. In the meantime, Julie stayed engaged in her profession, and she built relationships in every way she could. Julie also volunteered for advisory committees in her field and networked regularly at healthcare events. Now Julie's been in her role for almost 2 years, and she joins us today in the MaxList studio here in Portland to share how she found her dream job. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Julie, you're the Family Engagement and Support Specialist at Oregon Health Sciences University. Why do you love your job?
You know, I love my job because every day I get to help families who are experiencing very difficult times, understanding which way to turn. Their children might be in crisis, they have special health needs, and it's not an easy system to navigate. And so I get to both help those families and then also help the workforce that's helping those families.
Tell us about a typical day. What does that work involve that you just described?
Yeah, so I do a lot of program development around the state, and I'm part of a state team that is looking to enhance and support the development of coordinated specialty care. And this is an area of work where youth and young adults who are experiencing mental health crisis get connected with a team of providers and services. And I get the great privilege of working with their families. So I don't do the work directly with the young people, but I help support the families. And then there's also this burgeoning field of family support workers. And I get to work with that workforce to do professional development with them in creating excellence around this work.
And Julie, why do you enjoy that work with the families so much? What satisfaction do you get from that?
Yeah, so this is an interesting field of work in which your own personal lived experiences are requested to be brought in. So we don't have those same kind of work personal boundaries or professional personal boundaries that so many fields have. Many of us are out there experiencing the challenges of navigating the mental health system or developmental needs for our children and the education system. And we kind of learn skills through the school of hard knocks. And so that's what this family peer workforce is about, is people who have lived experience within their own personal lives coming and walking beside other families who are going through the same thing and lending support and mentorship to that work.
So you get to connect families that have had experiences with their children have had mental health challenges, and that you're connecting them with other families who are going through the same experience.
Yeah, and specifically, there's a program called the Crisis and Transition Services Program, and this is seeking to help reduce the rates of youth suicide that we're experiencing in this state. And so when young people come in, families bring their children into area emergency departments or crisis centers, this is one avenue for them to get connected and referred into a community-based team. And part of that team is a clinical service, and part of that team is this family peer support. So I get to work with the family peer supporters to help support them in doing that hard work.
Good. Well, tell us about your job search, Julie. I know in your article on the MaxList website, you shared one of your biggest challenges was the job didn't exist. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, this is a burgeoning field, like I said, and one of the things that that I find I've learned about myself and what I like to do and what I'm good at doing is program development and program enhancement. And so I was working as a family support specialist in the field, you know, working with families coming out of emergency departments and in this having this need. But I saw areas in which I knew we could improve the program overall. And so, you know, part of my other, another area of my work was in working to pass legislation that would make smoother transitions from crisis in the emergency department to community-based care. And so we were successfully passed a couple of laws that would support that work, and implementation of those laws is another area. So these are directly dovetailed with each other. And I saw an opportunity to put my skills to work in improving statewide this area of work rather than just doing the work in one county.
So, Julie, you created a job for yourself, didn't you?
I participated with a network of people who are leaders in this field, who are innovative in their way of thinking, and saw opportunity. And so part of it, I didn't create it myself.
Sure.
And so that's an oversimplification maybe of what happens, but I think that when we network with enough people, we continue volunteering in the field. Most of my legislative advocacy work was as a volunteer, and talking about our vision, talking to everyone we know, and again, you know, finding those people who are in leadership roles or influencer roles and talking to them. So in doing that, I found a group of people who shared the same vision.
Okay, so you were family support specialist, like doing the kind of work that you
right.
now help support. And we're speaking in Portland, Oregon today, and I know you work with specialists across the state, don't you?
I do. It's really, really very rewarding to see, especially in some of our rural counties where there are many fewer services available to them to kind of try and enhance and support the work there too.
Okay. And then but you didn't stop at just being a specialist. You were involved in your field, yet in touch with leaders, and you got involved in these policy advocacy efforts that resulted in new public dollars to grow this work. And as a result, this new position was created. And were you well positioned for that job because of those relationships, Julie?
Yeah, I think I was. The work that I was doing and the working as a change agent, I think, in this field is really, there's a lot of people doing work on the ground. And then when you are able to really get connected to the vision of how that work, because of what you're experiencing on the ground, how that work is both the areas where it's happening well and the areas where it needs to be improved. And so I think that's this other skill set that I have is seeing areas of that need improvement and having ideas for what those improvements might be.
Okay. And in your case, you work in mental health services for young adults and adolescents, but the principles apply to any field, don't they, Julie?
They really do. And in fact, this is my second career. My career is 30 years old. And I found that one of the things I did is I really looked at what are my transferable skills. A lot of these skills that I used in civic engagement and environmental education in the first half of my career are directly translatable to the work that I'm doing now, the networking, the putting yourself around people who are doing the work and leaders in the field, finding mentors and staying connected with them, being a mentor. These are all areas that it doesn't matter what field of work you're in. These are principles that apply.
Are there techniques that you use during your job search that really stand out for you in hindsight? We've talked about the importance of networking and relationships. What else did you find useful in helping you land the job you have now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I did a lot of the stuff that I think we all do. I kept my resume current. I created a portfolio. So anything that was relevant to the work that I'm doing and the contributions that I made, I put in a portfolio. When I was a kid, we used to call these scrapbooks.
This online, or is this an old-fashioned portfolio that you would take to meetings?
It's in a notebook, you know. And then the online portfolio would be using social media platforms like LinkedIn. One other technique that I use to get my foot in the door with area leaders is that I would respond to articles that I saw posted. So I'm sure you know of Neil Schaefer and leadership in LinkedIn and building your brand on LinkedIn. I responded at one point to something that Neil had.
I'm embarrassed. I don't know who Neil Schaefer
is.
Is he a LinkedIn influencer?
He's a LinkedIn influencer, and he talks about building your brand on LinkedIn.
So he's not somebody who's expert in your field. He's somebody you learn.
He's an expert in marketing yourself and, you know, building your own personal brand. Okay. And he said something that I thought was really great, and I responded to him and sent him a message or an email, and next thing I know, I have a signed copy of one of his books in my mailbox. So these are the ways, you know, we can just be human to human, and I think that a lot of times people who are in a vulnerable point in their career search, whether it's early in their career and they don't have a really well-developed resume, or mid-career, changing career fields, I think it's really just to remember that we're just talking to people.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you were going on LinkedIn in those days, was there a strategy that was driving that? Were you trying to build relationships with particular leaders in your professional field? Or what were you thinking, or what drove your work as you visited LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of that you describe. It was also exposure. You know, getting exposed on, you know, various platforms that people might see, staying involved in kind of knowing what's going on out in the field. So scanning just the nonprofit work, the healthcare work, all of that. So I read MaxList regularly and just saw what kind of jobs were out there. And, you know, that also helped in the creation of this, or the formula of this position that I'm in now, is what were the parts that existed in other positions and job openings that we could creatively put together that would fill this niche that we were trying to work on in this field.
What I love about your story, Julie, is you didn't wait for a supervisor or an executive director or a funder to decide how to meet a need. And as you pointed out, you didn't do it yourself, but you worked with others to create a position that people knew that met a need that people knew was important. And you didn't wait to be picked. You put yourself forward, didn't you?
Yeah, and in fact, this is what I did in the first part of my career too. I did get a government job. I worked at DEQ, and
that's the Department of Environmental Quality.
That's right, Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality. And I worked there for a couple of years, and then a grant opportunity came up for an environmental education project. And I asked my supervisor if I could do that. And after doing that for a couple of years and seeing how much that energized me, I got really good at writing grants. It's not that I aspired to write grants, but I knew that was an avenue by which I might be able to customize the work that I did. So I think I've got a history and track record of finding ways in which I could customize my career so that it could be rewarding for me.
So you took an entrepreneurial approach. Again, you didn't wait to be picked. You looked for opportunities that allowed you to shape and help direct the kind of work that you might do, even in a government agency.
That's right. And I think we can't underscore enough networking and collaborations. Most of the work I've done throughout my entire career has been cross-sector. And so, you know, government, private sector, higher education, systems, these are all of these different sectors have a stake in this important work that we set out to do. And so making sure that you're fostering relationship and knowledge about those various sectors, I think, is also beneficial.
Great. Well, Julie, what's your number one job hunting tip?
Oh, that's a really difficult question. I think staying informed and staying involved. Volunteering, if you're not working yet, get out there, volunteer, participate, intern, do informational interviews, and stay connected. There's nothing that can help you more than just to be out there and connected to people and to not get down when your job search is not necessarily going in the direction that you want it to go. Getting down and isolating yourself at home is not necessarily going to be helpful. So finding your support network and then asking people for help.
Yeah, we can't do it alone, can we?
No, we can't.
Okay. Well, Julie, thank you so much for sharing your story. You can learn more about Julie Major's job search by visiting maxlist.org/stories. And check out the MaxList website for dozens of other success stories. Every Friday, we add a new interview with a MaxList reader who has found a dream job. Go to maxlist.org/stories. In the meantime, thank you for listening to today's bonus episode of Find Your Dream Job.